You're listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Jennifer White. This hour, we've been talking about family structure and why it matters for low-income kids. And we want to talk about how best to support low-income families, regardless of structure, and what families say they really need to support their kids. Joining us now are Heather Brown, Program Manager at the Center for Family Success at Starfish Family Services, and Dr. Cleopatra Caldwell, Associate Professor in the Department of Health, Behavior, and Health Education, and Director of the Center for Research on Ethnicity, Culture, and Health at the University of Michigan's School of Public Health. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
You've both been listening to the conversation this hour, and we've heard a lot about the research and statistics and policy. But what do you hear from the families you interact with? I'll start with you, Heather.
We hear a lot from our families. They need a lot of support just getting by day to day, and a lot of the services and supports that are out there don't always make it happen for them. And they have to seek out other resources and support from their community.
Mm. What are they saying about family and what it means for kids, Cleo?
Well, I think one of the things that's really very important for us in terms of the families that we work for is that families want us to really focus on the strengths that they have. And for their kids, oftentimes, when you're talking about poverty, people talk about some of the challenges that they face, and that's very critical for us to focus on. But sometimes the strengths that these families have get missed in all of the kinds of things that people are focusing on. It kind of misses many of the strengths that they have, particularly as parents.
What are some of those strengths?
When we're talking about strengths, we're really talking about a lot that they do in terms of being involved with their children, focusing on teaching their children about their history, teaching them about who they are, teaching them to be proud of themselves, teaching them really to be strong adults. And that becomes very important if you're talking about raising healthy kids.
Mm-hmm. Heather, when you're talking to families, how did they picture success for their family? What does success look like for them as they would describe it?
I think it looks different for each family. They each define what success is for them. For some of our families, success is their kids finishing school. For them, success is having a home that's theirs with enough money to pay the bills and get what their kids need. Or success could be having a network around them that they can rely on and not feeling so alone and isolated.
What about for you, Cleo?
Well, I think in many cases, our families are really looking at this whole idea of diversity that exists within the family structure itself and looking for their kids to be able to succeed, regardless of how that family structure comes about. We work with families, for example, that have non-resident fathers involved in their children's lives. And I think this is really very important for us to highlight as a very special family type. And we've talked about families that have two parents and families that have one parent. We're talking about a family system where the father doesn't live in the household with the child, but the father is still involved.
So not an absentee dad, just a non-resident
dad. A non-resident dad. But this dad is still involved in his child's life, and he brings resources and support for that child, and he's interested in learning how to parent in a more effective way. In our research, we found that this is extremely important for helping the child to gain those strengths from both mothers and from fathers. And I think that's something that sometimes gets missed out there because that father is involved in his child's life, and that child then learns from both parents.
Let's take a call. Let's talk to Carrie in Flint. Hi, Carrie. Are you there?
A low-income single mom of a daughter, and then I got a degree and got married and had two sons. And my daughter is very successful, and my sons, sorry, I'm a little nervous. My sons are doing really well, and all three of my children love having the guidance from my husband and having his support and other person to go to. And I think it was the support of my married parents, my mother and father, who provided the support and guidance and model that I needed to help be a successful parent. And as a teacher, I see single parents come in And they have all these excuses of why their children aren't reading or doing their homework or being successful. And it frustrates me because I was there, and they don't have a husband to worry about, or and many times they don't even have a job. They forget to wake up, and they bring their child to school late, dressed in their pajamas. And I think that what needs to happen is society just needs to have higher expectations of these parents. And the politicians keep expecting the social services and teachers, schools, to make children successful, where I think that they need to finally have the courage to put that pressure on parents and expect more from them.
Carrie, thanks for your call. Two things stood out for me in Carrie's comment. One is that she had parents who were part of her life and part of supporting her kids before she got married. Do we see families who have this sort of extended base of support, and is that important to making sure the kids are successful? Heather?
When you say extended base, are you talking about
grandparents, aunt, uncles?
Absolutely.
Neighbors, friends?
The families involved in our program come with their neighbors, their sisters, entire families come, grandmothers come with their daughters and their grandchildren. And I think that it is really important and a great asset to have an extended family, or if they're not biological, just people they consider family involved.
Mm-hmm. So it was said earlier on, it does take a village to raise
Absolutely.
A child. And I think the other thing that's really important to understand is that we aren't born being parents. Parenting skills are learned. And sometimes if we don't learn it within the context of our families, it's important to have programs that can support those parenting skills being learned, even in programs that are supported. And sometimes that there are programs that are supported at the state level, at the federal level, within volunteer programs, even within churches. There are opportunities for parenting skills to be taught. And when we look at those programs, most often they are provided for mothers, but being able to provide those programs for fathers as well, and even extended family members, I think it's important because sometimes people don't know what needs to be done.
So what kind of programs work well for families? You mentioned interventions that include parenting help. What else do you see working?
There are simple things. When we go to the literature, when we talk with parents, and some grandmothers have the best wisdom around these kinds of things, there are some consistent skills that are necessary. We know monitoring. Nothing beats monitoring. That's simply knowing where your children are. We also know that there are basically being able to show and convey love and affection for children. Nurturing is really important in terms of being able to help children understand who they are, where they came from, knowing their history. With African American children, knowing what it means to be African American in this society becomes extremely important. So that concept of resocialization becomes a very important skill to convey. But there are many different parenting skills that are important to be able to teach parents who don't have it. Most of the time we learn it because we're raised in certain ways. So what Carrie was talking about, how a parent gets their child prepared for school, the importance of learning within families, the importance of, for some families, religion, that there are certain kinds of values that are culturally based. There are certain kinds of values that are passed down from generation to generation that happens within families, that if it's not happening there, that there are parenting programs that can help with that.
Heather, have you found that families know about resources, that they come to you and are aware that there are things to help them, to help them learn how to be better parents, that there are programs and resources available?
I think that there are a lot of programs out there and families are aware of them. I don't know how often families feel like they can access them or that they'll meet all their needs. I think the parenting piece is important, but I think looking at the whole family is important. And if a parent is struggling with a mental health issue or with basic needs, not being able to feed their family or keep their lights on, it's going to be really hard to make it a priority to sit down with their child at night and read for 30 minutes like the teacher wants them to. So for me, my experience has been that if you can look at the family holistically and not just focus on one particular issue, but note that they're all interconnected. And like you mentioned, the family strengths. Looking at the family strengths and what they have inherent in them and building on that, if a family feels good about themselves and who they are, and they will feel empowered and they will feel more capable of managing.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, because families really are embedded within communities.
Absolutely.
And then families are able to build on the community's strengths. And so I think that Heather's point is really a very important one, because families have multiple needs. So it's not just one thing. And that parenting becomes really important within the context of all of these other needs that they have. Because when we look at one of the things that we were talking about before is this whole idea of policies and what policies do. And so much of the policies around parenting and families focus on the economic side of things, because we know that that's an important part of it. And if you don't have a job, if you don't have health care, if you don't have some of these basic kinds of needs, you can't move forward with some of the other things that are really important for raising healthy children. But they all seem to be so fragmented that accessing them, mm-hmm. like you say, in a coherent way, gets to be problematic. So if we could have some way of providing that kind of safety net that knits it all together for us so that parents can really understand what it takes to bring it all together, I think we'd be in much better condition. So I think that's an excellent point, that being able to put it together is important.
But, you know, this is really interesting, because I think, you know, when I read some of the articles, and there is this casting of good parents and bad parents, and not a real understanding of some of the complexities that can exist in families. If, for instance, you're dealing with, say, mental illness, depression, or something like that, and that gets lost in the conversation, why do you think it's been so simplified that there are good parents and there are bad parents? Cleo?
I think that's an excellent point, because I think we have a tendency to be reductionist, and it's easier to deal with things in compartmentalized ways. If this parent is doing everything that they are supposed to do, and it makes it easier on the system, whatever that system is, school system, healthcare system, employers, then they are categorized as good parents. If they are problematic, causing problems, then they become bad parents. But I think it works from the system's point of view rather than the family's point of view.
Let's take a call from Emily in Warren. Emily, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, you got my name wrong, but yeah, I just wanted to say about from what I'm seeing, it's like, women usually have a choice on who they want to father their children. And a lot of times it seems like those women will choose like a tattoo artist over someone that works and wants to have a family. I think like probably 90% of men want to have families, and then there's like 10% that don't. And a lot of women are choosing those 10%, and that's why there's a lot of fatherless children, where – I think a lot of what in society,
we're running out of time. So
a lot of women need to woman up and get responsibility and do what's the right thing. Choose a good man. Don't choose a bad man.
Okay, I think we've got that call. Thank you so much. So, you know, we get into this conversation about, again, you know, good mothers, bad mothers, good fathers, bad fathers. But what I'm hearing from both of you, again, is that this is very complex. When we look at the policies that are built around families to support families, in Michigan specifically, is there enough to help families break out of these cycles of poverty? Is enough support for these families to you know, we're talking about 1 in 4 kids in Michigan living in poverty. That's a pretty astounding number. Are we doing enough, Cleo?
Well, I really don't think we are doing enough. If we were doing enough, we wouldn't see these numbers remain so steady over time. I think we have to really think about how we are approaching these issues and really what it means, especially when we're talking about trying to bring families together. And if we're talking about for the good of the child, we really have to consider both parents, especially if both parents are interested in being involved. Sometimes we have policies that fragment families rather than bringing families together. And when we consider I focus a lot on fathers. Many of the policies really don't include fathers or distance fathers more from families.
Can you give us an example of a policy that you that fragments a family rather than bringing it together?
When I think of even child support policies, for example, a father who wants to pay child support directly to the family can't. A father has to go through court systems in order to pay child support. So that's not trusting fathers, if you will, to be able to be responsible for paying child support. Now, some would argue that there are some who can't be trusted, but there's no option, and that becomes problematic in many sense, in many ways. So we're really talking about there should be ways. There are some people who do research on the earned income tax credit, for example, and say that they disadvantage low-income fathers. So in many ways, that there are policies that are in place that are not helpful for low-income fathers to be able to do more.
Heather, you work with families in your role at Starfish Family Services. If you could choose, if you had your druthers, what would you like to see more of to support the families you work with?
I would like to see more resources available that were with a single entry point or more of a seamless service array where families could go in and get their needs addressed. They don't have to go to one place for food, one place for counseling, one place for this, because they all have competing requirements and priorities. I would like to see families getting some real basic need help. And we have a lot of programs out there where services are available, but a lot of times they kind of stop short and take someone almost there, but not all the way. And it's like you were saying, Cleo, having a better system in place or having systems that are more effective. The example you gave about the father who wants to pay, he goes through the court, but then the court system is so disjointed, the mother doesn't get the money right away, and then it creates more tension between the mother and the father.
Exactly.
So it hits him on that end as well.
This has been a great conversation. I wish we had more time, but unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Heather Brown, Program Manager at the Center for Family Success at Starfish Family Services, and Cleo Caldwell, Director of the Center for Research on Ethnicity, Culture, and Health at the University of Michigan's School of Public Policy. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
You've been listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. You can continue to share your thoughts with us on Facebook. Just search for State of Opportunity. State of Opportunity was produced and directed by Zoe Clark with help from Sarah Alvarez and Allie Billings. The program was engineered by Bob Scon. Tamar Cherney is the executive producer. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Jennifer White.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.